Hello, and welcome to The Canadian Story, where we discuss what Canada is, what Canada could be, and what Canada should be.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here, and welcome to The Canadian Story. Today, we are joined by Mr. Mark Mallett. Mark, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be with you guys.
So could we please start the same way we start every episode these days? Could you just tell us who you are so that we have a bit of a background of who we're listening to?
Sure. Yeah, I'm an author. Presently, I'm an author, singer-songwriter for the last 20 years. But prior to that, I was a reporter with CTV Edmonton. And some people might know me as the host of Profit Line, which before then was called The Risk Takers. Alberta Business was another iteration of that show. And it was widely watched in Edmonton. But when the news industry, basically most industries in television, cut back everything but the news. So all local programming was cut. And that happened to us in, I think it was 1999. So after that program was cut, I found myself on the street. And but I'm a musician. That was something I always wanted to do. So I started cutting albums and touring across the United States and Canada. At that time, my wife and I started, we have 8 children between us. And between us, I mean, we had 8 children together. A lot of people ask me that, you know, was that like your wife's kids? And you, no, we had 8 children. And we would travel around Canada, United States in a diesel pusher. And it was just a hoot. And we would go do concerts throughout the United States and in Canada. And then I just ended up becoming an author, just writing about reflections on the times that we're going through, the times we're living. And then about 3 years ago, when COVID-19 happened, every inner instinct in me said there's something wrong with what we're being told in the news, what's happening in the media. I thought it was really bizarre how the entire mainstream media establishment were all saying the same thing. They weren't asking questions. They weren't criticizing. They weren't critiquing. And as a former news reporter, I knew that something was up. I knew the smell of propaganda. I knew what it smelled like. I'd seen it already in my industry. And I knew that what was unfolding before me was one of the biggest propaganda acts in probably in all of human history. I think Stalin would be drooling at what we have watched unfold over the last 3 years. And it's sad. It's really sad. And a lot of people are still very deceived right now as to what they see daily on the news. So that's kind of where I am right now. And these are extraordinary times we're living in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And before we kind of dive into all of the nitty gritty, I would be remiss to not talk a little bit about your music career, because you probably don't know this about me because we just met 3 minutes ago, but I currently work in the music industry. I work for a band, Canadian band called Walk Off the Earth, going out and doing shows with them. So we've toured through
awesome.
26 or 27 countries together. I've been with them, and I own a recording studio. So I help musicians cut records every week. So you and I, super. I'm sure we could go forever on that. But
yeah.
What kind of music do you make? And tell me a little bit about your touring experience.
Yeah, sure. My music, I grew up writing love songs. I mean, that was my favorite thing. I don't know why, but I was kind of my music's kind of a folk new country blend. I wasn't a real...
Kind of like a Bob Dylan or a Leonard Cohen or...
More like James Taylor meets Billy Dean, Steve Warner. I mean, back in the 90s when I was in university, I was studying to be an engineer, actually, a mechanical engineer. Boy, did I get that wrong. I used to sit, you know, instead of doing my homework, I would sit and watch CMT, you know, country music television. And back then, country music went into kind of a pop flavor. And it wasn't really country music, but it was country, but it was very, it was incredibly musical, very emotional, very, just beautiful. I thought a lot of great artists came out of that period. And, so my own writing, I would sit and studying homework. I would sit in the hallways and, in the stairwells of my residence at university and with the echo in the stairwell, write songs. And, eventually I began touring. A lot of my music, because I'm a Christian, I would write, a lot of it was also spiritual as well. So, you know, not only my love for my wife and for, you know, romance and so on, but my love for God as well. And I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed to say that. I'm not sure why we have to be ashamed in our society to say that we have a relationship with God. I mean, it's okay for a Muslim to say it, right? It's okay for maybe a Jew to say it, but not for someone who's a Christian. So we can see already there's a hypocrisy there. But we traveled around as a family, and most of my venues were churches, actually. And I remember my first album was nominated for a Prairie Music Award. The first album that came out was around 2001. And I remember being invited to, with other major country artists in Canada, to this bar in Regina. And they had us all singing in this bar, and it was so incredibly loud and filled with smoke. I mean, it was nuts in there. And there I was singing this like a really upbeat, almost like an Irish dancing tune. It's a Christian song. And like, it was like people were totally clued out what they were dancing to and yelling. But I remember that night getting back to my hotel room, and I said to my wife, I said, I will never trade singing for, you know, 30, 40 people who are attentive and quiet and listening in a church for what we just went through. And we stunk like smoke, and it was just nobody even were listening to what we were doing. And honestly, I've had just the absolute best experience traveling. I've been to churches that have been totally packed. And just people attentive and listening. And it's not just the music too, but you can share a message with people, encourage them, give them hope. And I love that. But honestly, right now I'm more in a reporter mode. I have to admit, I've been trying to wake people up. I'm not kidding when I say, hopefully save lives through what's going on, because I don't know how far you guys get into this stuff. And so I have to be, you're going to have to tell me if you guys are worried about being censored, because we'll have to.
Oh, we already are.
We are way past that.
Zach, do we
congratulations.
Have one strike left on YouTube, or are we done on YouTube now?
Well, I've been very careful with what we've published on YouTube since we were sitting at two strikes. Cause if we had gotten one more, our YouTube would have been taken down. So we're down. Yeah. We've shaken one strike off, and we're down, but they canceled one strike, but then extended the length of our second strike. So we're still in YouTube jail. But yeah, we're not worried about censorship.
Facebook, we've been put in Facebook jail a number of times. Yes.
So yeah, congratulations.
Yeah. So we're not worried about censorship. All the good stuff goes on Rumble. All the good stuff goes to Spotify and goes to Apple Music, the Apple iTunes. So that's okay. Where the good content is. So I consider myself an individual to be at the bottom of the rabbit hole. So I'm sure we'll be right on pace.
Right. Okay. So what you're saying is then you don't want me to censor myself?
Please don't. No. Please don't. We don't want censored conversations here ever. That's not what we do.
Yeah. Amazing that we have to say that in Alberta, Canada.
Yeah, it is. It is. So let's dive into the nitty gritty. And one last point on the music. Speaking of church shows, I have been myself to many, many wonderful, wonderful church shows and played many church shows myself. And my first time ever crowd surfing was at a church during a Hawk Nelson show. And it was the best time of my life when I was 12 years old. And so you can't knock the church shows at all. I think my parents were horrified when they saw me go up there, but, but I was having a blast. Okay. So let's dive into the nitty gritty, because there's lots to talk about here. Maybe you have a great jump off point, but you mentioned propaganda. So let's maybe talk about that, because you have a unique perspective as someone who comes from the industry. You come from CTV, you spent time in that machine, you understand how it behaves. And at some point, even just in my preliminary, like growing up with news, understanding of how news worked, that behavior changed in the last little while. And it's hard to put my finger on exactly when that change happened, because I wasn't looking for it until I realized it had changed during COVID. So maybe you can speak to what you observed happen in the industry of news over the course of whenever it started changing.
Sure. I was there in the 90s working at CFRN TV, which is of course now CTV Edmonton. And during that time, I started seeing some of the best reporters in our news station just disappeared. And I mean, we're all coming and going all the time, but it would be like a month later and I'd go, "Hey, where's so-and-so?" And they go, "Oh, well, he's not here anymore. He's at, CBC News or something on the radio." And I started seeing all these good reporters. And when I say good reporters, these were people who they loved to do investigative reporting. And they weren't necessarily, good looking people in terms of what we see on the news today, like models. But what happened was we had these consultants come down from the United States and they began to overturn everything we knew about television, all my training in television and everything. They said, we want you to take your cameras off the tripods. We want the footage to be shaky. It's okay if it goes out of focus. And like the cameraman hated it because for them, it was an art and they were telling them to throw your art out the window and just, kind of create this drama. So, I mean, we'd show up at, fender benders. And I never understood why a fender bender was news. But anyway, we'd show up and, they'd have these cameras shaking and our interviews would be shaky. And then the other thing was, again, they started getting rid of this high grade talent. And they started to replace them with students right out of Nate or wherever who had no journalism experience whatsoever, but they could sit and read in front of a camera. And I started seeing this in the whole industry where suddenly these really nice looking people were on TV, but you could tell there was no real serious journalism depth. And even if they came across that way, it was like you could tell whether there was serious journalism depth by the questions they asked. And it would just seem that everyone was following a narrative. Now, it is true when I was there, even before this change, we would get news coming off of the wire, as they called it, and it would literally come in on a fax machine and the anchors would get it. And, this would come in on their computers as well. And they would basically take the script they were given, maybe tweak a couple words for themselves and then read it. But even then, our anchors back then, they had journalism skills and they had a journalism sense and it was important to them. And I think at least there was an effort to be objective in the news back then. Today, though, there isn't much effort. In fact, I'll give you one story. When I worked, and I don't know if this had to do with my show, and I don't think I've ever talked about this publicly in a public program like this, but I wrote a letter to the editor of the Edmonton Journal. This is back in the late 90s. And I said, "Why is it that we in the media are so ready and willing and eager to put up videos and photos of war victims and car accidents and all these gruesome things to tell a story? And yet one of the biggest controversies in our country, abortion, we're not willing to even talk about the story, let alone show the real pictures. I mean, we can put up a warning like we did for everything else." And I asked the question, why aren't we doing this as a media? And I was hauled into my newsroom office and they told me don't ever write or talk about this again. And it was probably within a couple months that my show was cut. And Bell Media is actually known, who owns CTV Edmonton, is known for being very liberal. They let go a CTV reporter. Sorry, I think it was a TSN reporter, actually, I think, because he said, I think in his own private social media or wherever privately, said that he was supportive of traditional marriage and they fired him. So the environment in news was beginning to change to being much more hostile. They weren't really, I think, in favor of anything what we would call traditional family or conservative views. They weren't in favor of it, but they at least tried to feign being objective. And I saw in the 90s and into the 2000s how that began to change and it began to be more and more aggressive. And today, now we see it in the form of wokeism, where, I mean, there is a deliberate and systematic and aggressive propaganda out there to pretty much eliminate any notion of proper understanding of biology, of the natural law of morality. And so this idea that we are watching on CNN or even Fox News or CBC News, CTV News, that we're watching objective media, I can tell you right now, we are not. Because I have spent the last 3 years and thousands of hours studying, looking in the alternative media for the voices of professionals, qualified scientists. I'm talking world-renowned immunologists or cardiologists or whoever they may be, including people like Dr. Robert Malone, who has 9 patents on mRNA vaccines, listening to their opinions. Some of them who got fully injected with this mRNA stuff, now coming against it because of the data. And the mainstream media completely ignoring these men. That's propaganda. That's, and it's propaganda, the sin of censorship, of just the sin of omission, in a sense, by simply not saying anything and keep repeating this line, the great big lie, as Nazi propagandists would call it. You just keep repeating a big lie over and over again, and people keep believing it. And the big lie in our times is that these injections are safe and effective. So anyway, well, I'll just stop there in case you had any questions or so on, because I was there. I lived through it. I saw how they emptied the newsrooms of really good reporters and filled them up with talking pretty heads. And I think this is the media that we have today. It's very shallow. These anchors and these news reporters are very obedient. And the ones who aren't, they get let go. They get warned, they get fired. And we've seen this. A CBC reporter left last year, a Fox News reporter left, and they went public and said, I can't stand this anymore. I can't go along with this anymore. It's no longer objective news reporting.
Yeah, that's
well, it's interesting. Oh, go ahead, Zach.
Your turn, David.
It's interesting that you say that, because actually I'm very close with someone who just left iPolitics, actually. And published her story about how she was being censored literally by the government calling the media outlet and saying, you got to change the story. Then they changed the story on her. She was on our show, Rachel Emanuel. They changed her article without telling her and published it. And she wrote about it and went public about it. I think we're seeing exactly what you're describing. I think we've talked about that on this show. Not a whole lot, Zach, would you say, but a decent amount. We've tried to address this problem. I'm really happy to have someone who's looked into it so much. So I have a bunch of questions to ask you. The first is, what would be the basic signs that we can explain in simple and logical terms to people how the media has become propaganda? So like simple ways of understanding it. Two, you made a video called Follow the Science. I'd like you to share with everyone about that. I know it has 2 million views on Rumble, which both Zach and I know as content producers how hard that is to achieve. So congratulations on that as well. But I'd like to hear about that. But then finally, as someone who has done about, like you said, 3 years of research on this, I'd like to hear your full perspective on what's actually going on, so that we can get that out to people. Because yeah. I know a lot of people have been very grateful. We had Dr. McCullough on. He was able to give a very succinct perspective on what he thought was happening medically. We've had Dr. Laura Braden and others that have done that. But I'd love to hear it from your perspective as well. Because I think as we gather information and share it with one another, the picture of what is actually occurring will become more clear.
Right. Okay. Well, I think I'm just going to say right out in the front and right up front. And I said this to David the other night when we first met, David, is that I don't think this is no longer we're dealing with left versus right, left-wing politics versus right-wing politics. I really believe we are watching unfold in front of us a real battle between evil and good. And I'm saying that right now with a straight face, and I mean it 100%. In fact, one of the most startling things I've seen during the last 3 years of this pandemic is a lot of these scientists who, you know, these are people who speak strictly on data, strictly on the science that's before them, beginning to speak in existential terms. Dr. Mike Eden, for instance, Vice President, former Vice President of Pfizer, Chief Scientist. I mean, this is one of the top level guys of Pfizer who's no longer with that company. He said when he looked at the propaganda and how they were rolling out these experimental mRNA injections that have, with no long-term studies. He said, I think we are standing at the very gates of hell. Dr. Zelensky, I think I loaded up some of these things. Dr. Zelensky said that that's what's happening through the mass propaganda and how everyone is lining up with this and unquestioningly going with it. I mean, locking down healthy people for weeks and months on end. This has never been done. We used to quarantine the sick. You don't quarantine the healthy and destroy your economy. And Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, who's now passed away, he said there's a mass psychosis happening. He said it's akin to what's happened in German society before and during World War II, where normal, decent people were turned into AIDS and just following orders type of mentality that led to genocide. He said, I now see that same paradigm happening. Dr. Peter McCullough, who I think you guys might have interviewed him. Dr. Peter McCullough, again, one of the most cited scientists in the National Library of Medicine, you know, highly credible. Whenever this guy opens his mouth, he's not giving his opinion. He just keeps citing data, citing studies. This is all this guy does. And I'll tell you, as a news reporter, I love that because I'm like, you know, I don't mind your opinion, but when you back it up with data, I want to listen to you. And he said much the same thing. He said there's like a disturbia going on. He said like a group neurosis. He says it's something that's come over the minds of people all over the world. He said whatever's going on is going on in the tiniest island in the Philippines and Indonesia, the smallest little village in Africa and South Africa. He says, it's all the same. It's come over the entire world. I mean, these guys are groping to understand how this mass psychosis has happened. And Dr. Robert Malone, again, he says this is what happened to the German people. He says it's like a mass hypnosis. And so, again, here you have these scientists beginning to I think, They're now outside of the parameters that they're used to working in, which is data. And now they're starting to deal in social, the social fabric, social politics. But I think even further, they're starting to say there's something even spiritual going on here. And some of them are just openly now saying this is a battle between good and evil. And I totally agree with that. So going to your first question then, you know, how do we understand that this is, how do we get to this place where there is this mass propaganda? And I believe it can be maybe explained in part by the fact that five or six of the corporations own all of the media. And so it's around five or six, and there's a small portion that are still independent media. But when you have all of the major news corporations owned by these major corporations, that's an awful lot of control. And when they control the money, they can control the narrative. So if you watch American news, you guys, most of the commercials during the news are pharmaceutical companies and they're selling their drugs. Well, if they're the major advertiser, that's where the major dollars come from. This is how news survives. They need those advertisers. And so do you think that the news media is going to come on and start slamming Moderna and Pfizer and beginning to report the mass deaths that are happening now that are reflected in not only the VAERS system, which is the American system for collecting safety signals of what's going on after a vaccination campaign. But you've got Ultravigilance, you've got the Israeli data and other countries, Scotland and so on, showing all these mass deaths following the vaccine campaign. And the media isn't saying anything. I mean, come on, this is the media that wants to chase fender benders. And they love drama. They love death and destruction because it sells. It does. And now they're absolutely silent. So there's something going on. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that every news reporter and every anchor and every news producer are sitting there going, we're in on a conspiracy. No, but it filters down. And little Joe Blow there, who graduated from Ryerson or whatever journalism school, and he's been in his job for a year. He wants to move up to an anchor position. He's not going to buck what his news producer is saying. He's not going to go contrary to the narrative because he knows he'll get let go. I shared with you my own story. If you talk about abortion again, we'll fire you. I mean, that's the way it was. So, and now you can imagine now you've got this tremendous pressure coming down from these pharmaceutical companies. And you gave an example of the government contacting news sources. So you do have BBC, CBC, who are controlled by their governments that are left-wing governments in terms of much of their policy. You know, they're dictating. I mean, CBC is funded by the government. It's incredibly stupid. And I hope the conservatives, Pierre Poilievre, hopefully follows through with his promise to defund them. And maybe we'll begin to see CBC become a bit more of the news, monolith that they were at one time, where you could actually watch the CBC news and get some pretty decent news coverage. But today they're a shadow of who they are. They're a propaganda outlet, is all CBC. They're horrible. If you go into their, just reading their news stories, the first two paragraphs, they begin the story, if it's critical of something contradicting the narrative, it's immediately blatant, the bias in the stories. This isn't the CBC that I knew. So that's the first question. That's my first answer. There's five or six corporations controlling the dollars for these. Now, I can't remember your second question, though, Zach.
It was David who had asked it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So my second question was, so ask someone who's been watching, I don't remember what the order of the questions was, to be honest. But I think that the first one you gave is ask a reporter, you're giving your perspective on what's occurring in the media and why, which is great. Now, as someone who's been doing research for the last 3 years, what do you think is happening? So there's a propaganda campaign, but there's a lot of people that have given a lot of thoughts on this show. Let's say some people have said that it's a profit thing. Just follow the money, right? A lot of people made a lot of money off of this, and who cares if some people died? They don't care. They want to make a lot of money. However, from what that some people say, this is the one world government trying to take over. Like you said, there's people saying we're standing at the gates of hell. I want to know your as clear sighted as you can opinion on what is actually happening right now. What are we actually seeing occur in the world? And then I'd love to discuss that.
Okay. Well, yeah. In my research, it was inevitable that I would end up on the doorstep of Bill Gates, the United Nations, and the World Economic Forum. When COVID broke out, a book came out, I believe in March 2020, a book that was fully written, researched, footnoted, before most people had even, coughed from COVID. And the book came out from Professor Klaus Schwab and his co-author, on COVID-19 and how COVID-19 and climate change would become the two pillars of what he called the Great Reset. And one of their other slogans is Build Back Better. And suddenly you had people like former Vice President John Kerry saying we need to listen to Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. You had Justin Trudeau, our prime minister, speaking of this reset, this Great Reset. The very motto of Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, during his election campaign was, let's build back better. And then you had other world leaders around the world beginning to parrot this language. And I thought, what is this Great Reset? I mean, aren't we just 2 weeks to flatten the curve? I mean, isn't that what we're doing? And then we're going back to what we're doing. And they were saying, no, they were saying this, we will never go back to normal. Several world leaders said this, like Boris Johnson, Klaus Schwab, of course, himself saying this, we will never, ever go back to normal. Henry Kissinger said the exact same thing. And they kept all of them referring to climate change and COVID-19. And I began to realize, COVID-19 doesn't seem to be just a crisis that just popped up out of the blue. No, in fact, months before COVID-19 broke out, they were running with Johns Hopkins University a scenario of what would happen if a coronavirus broke out, funded in part by, the usual people like Bill Gates and so on. And I think one of the most fascinating stories, by the way, I'm just going to go on to a segue with Bill Gates, is Bill Gates and the Rockefeller Foundation, both now involved in health. If you go back to John Rockefeller at the turn of the century, last century, this was a guy heavily involved in petrochemicals and oil. He was helping to build the Nazi war machine. And after the war was over, John Rockefeller had to figure out what to do with all these chemicals that he were developing. And they began to, he began to use his money to create the, you know, allopathic medicine, which was to, rather than treat the root cause of one's illness, they would begin to treat just the symptoms with his pharmaceutical drugs that he were beginning to develop. And the interesting thing is now today in our society, we think that people who are naturopaths, people who use essential oils and natural means, we call them quack science. I don't call them that, but that's what the media does. That's what even some doctors today who are trained up in this allopathic scenario say. But back then, this is fascinating. You can see old cartoons and newspapers. John Rockefeller was the quack. He was the snake oil salesman of that time. And the thousands of years of knowledge that we gathered from all kinds of cultures, Chinese culture, European culture, on how to cure people through natural means was completely discarded. And to make a long story short, John Rockefeller used what he called philanthropy. He started to donate and change his image because his image was horrible. So he started to have this image change of being a philanthropist, one who would donate and who would, you know, make health his cause. And he, through his money, he would appoint people in university positions and huge grants to universities and began to change the entire medical paradigm. This is a matter of historical fact. Documentarian James Corbett has done a brilliant job of unfolding these things of what has happened historical. Well, now fast forward to Bill Gates. Bill Gates got in trouble with the law, with Microsoft, and I believe it was a monopoly case, and how they were trying to monopolize software and so on computers with Microsoft, and they were found guilty. If you go back to those tapes and watch him in court, Bill Gates is extremely bizarre man. And he came out of that looking terribly, his reputation was in shatters. So what did he do? He followed the same playbook as John Rockefeller. Suddenly he became this philanthropist and started donating to these causes and took up the cause of vaccinating, especially vaccinating the third world. But was it all benign? Was he just this generous man? Well, he went on, I think it was CBS News, if I'm not mistaken, and talked about how he's making a 20-to-1 investment over what he did with Microsoft. It's extremely lucrative, the whole industry. So here you now have Bill Gates using his philanthropy to completely control and dictate what's going on. He's one of the chief funders. He was the chief funder. I think he's now the second biggest cheap funder next to the United States government of the World Health Organization. So he has tremendous sway in what is going on in the world in terms of our health. So that was just a little segue because he's also one of the big funders of the World Economic Forum. And so what is going on here is you have these global leaders and globalists, philanthropists, banking families now meeting as they just did in Davos in Switzerland to basically, as John Kerry said, you know, it's really overwhelming. He says that there's such a small group of us are going to decide kind of how the future of the world goes. And I'm just saying to myself, I didn't vote for Klaus Schwab. I didn't vote for Bill Gates. I didn't vote for these globalists. And yet, they are indeed forming this entire narrative to build back better. And here's the point. Here's now what I'm getting at, David. What we're watching, in my opinion, after thousands of hours of research and reading and studying what's going on, is you cannot build back better unless you tear down what was there. What is a great reset but hitting the button and causing everything to go back to zero? And that's exactly what these guys are planning to do. This is a, in my opinion, and in the opinion of, I think, people who are far greater intellects than me and experts on world politics, are beginning to say what is going on is a deliberate takedown of the economy. Look, as I said before, you don't lock down healthy people for weeks and months on end, thereby destroying not only the supply chain, but thousands of businesses have gone out. They've gone out of a business for good. They've shut doors forever because they couldn't come back. They couldn't make a bounce back from it. And I mean, even in my own town here in Northern Alberta, I go into the pizza restaurant here at supper time, as I did last night, there's nobody in there. He said at supper time, we used to be filled with people. He said, there's nobody coming hardly anymore to dine out. People are afraid. They've just been reprogrammed now to stay at home. He said, fortunately, because we're pizza, he said, we're still doing good business because people will come pick it up or we'll deliver. But you see this everywhere. And you had this is, I think, what's so mind-blowing is you had the United Nations saying that lockdowns is a primary means of controlling the virus. He said this will cause millions of deaths in third world countries. And he was warning that we will double the amount of deaths already in the queue just due to famine and so on in third world countries. He said, if you lock down, we will kill millions of people. And this was United Nations. I can't remember his name. It's in my documentary. And I'm listening to this, you guys, and this is like 2 years ago, and I'm sitting here going, so we're going to lock down everybody from a virus that officially has a 99.7 on average survival rate. And we're going to lock down healthy people and kill millions in the process so that you and I essentially don't get what the World Health Organization describes as mild flu-like symptoms. And the CDC, that's right on their website. For most people, this is mild flu-like symptoms. Now, why aren't we hearing about what's going on in the third world countries? I don't know, but I can share one anecdote with you. Two young women went to Peru, and they went there to live a new life in Peru. And she was a successful businesswoman. She said during the pandemic, people were starving to death. And so they rented an apartment and started getting food from Canada sent up and trying to feed people like almost like a little food bank out of this apartment. And she actually mentally broke down. She couldn't do it and came back to Canada and told my friend, who then conveyed this story to me. How many stories like this are going on in the world? What about what's going on right now in third world countries? I mean, I just posted a story on our MeWe group called the Now Word Signs. That's my group where I'm posting daily with a fellow researcher. We're following the news and posting all kinds of stories. And we're doing it because we're uncensored there. It's MeWe. And you have to join the group, thenowwordsigns.com or the Now Word Signs. And I posted a story yesterday where Haiti is completely falling apart, right? Like gangs roving and so on. And these globalists know this is going to be the outcome. But you see, these guys view us as evolutionary products. They view us as random particles that have highly evolved, but we're no more better than the apes. We're no more less great in a sense than frogs or fish. We're just more highly evolved. So to them, we're just a product of evolution. And the whole concept behind evolution, Darwinism, and so on, was that there was natural selection, that the best survive. And this is why we ended up with eugenics programs like the Third Reich, why we ended up with eugenics programs like Planned Parenthood, which were built primarily in Black neighborhoods. And Margaret Sanger, who started Planned Parenthood, was openly a eugenicist and open in her remarks about this. So eugenics hasn't, maybe we don't have jackboots marching up and down our streets, but the eugenics program hasn't ended. And there's another concept, and I think I'm getting more and more to the heart of this, David. There's another concept that's emerging during this pandemic, and it's this whole idea of overpopulation. And you see this in the dogmas of the World Economic Forum, of how we need to take people off the urban, off the rural land. We need to move people off the land into urban centers and rewild the land. And what I mean by rewild is take down the buildings, get people off the land, including cattle and other animals. How are you going to do this? How are you going to move what is now, what's the world population, 7-8 billion, whatever it is right now? How you move that amount of people into centers? You couldn't. So there has to be a culling, and that culling has begun. It's begun with this bird flu crisis, which we've never killed so many birds deliberately as we have now, because they found one bird in a flock, and so they killed the entire flock. We're now up into hundreds of millions of birds being killed, which has now created a food shortage. Chicken has gone up, and in some places, you can't even buy eggs now. And this is the kind of thing we're seeing everywhere, widespread. They're just doing things deliberately in the name of health, in the name of for the common good. They're doing things that are actually destroying the common good, destroying our freedom, destroying the entire infrastructure. We're in an extremely dangerous moment, because they're looking for, and they're openly announcing the next pandemic. And Bill Gates just came out recently and said, oh, the next pandemic, the next virus that comes, it'll probably be man-made, and oh, it will be scary. I mean, who comes out and says this kind of stuff, especially when you're the world's biggest investor in vaccines? Now, he might say that, but here's the thing that blows my mind, is why doesn't the average citizen hear something like that and say, this is funky to me? I mean, it would be like the head of GM coming out and saying, oh, every bike in the world must be destroyed, and every bus and train destroyed, and everyone needs to be driving a GM. I mean, this what needs to happen, because we are one of the top manufacturers. But we would look at it and go, oh, yeah, right, buddy, you're insane. Why don't we do this when someone like Bill Gates, who is not even remotely unbiased and huge conflicts of interest, why don't we look at that guy and say, give it a break, man? And I think the reason is in part, as part of my research, you guys, in the pandemic, was starting to look at the broader question of vaccines. And let me just say right now, I mean, in itself, the whole technology behind vaccines is somewhat brilliant. It's the idea that you introduce a pathogen, you stimulate a natural immune response, and then you're immune to that. The problem is, it's the adjuvants, it's the other chemicals and other things that they have put into the vaccines, and then increased a vaccine schedule so that by the time, at least in the United States and probably other places, by the time you're 18, you've got somewhere between 70 to 80 vaccines, and you've got a cumulative effect of all these things in your body. And at the same time, what we've seen, at the exact same time they increased the vaccine schedule among kids, you've got autoimmune diseases among children now exploding. I read an article that by the year 2032, one in two kids will be autistic. This is extraordinary. And we're not asking what it could possibly be. And, you know, again, this is where the media, you guys, the propaganda is extraordinary. If you search up autism and vaccines, what you'll immediately see, the first 3-4 pages on Google, is you'll see that there's no connection. It's been debunked. There's no connection between vaccines and autism. There's over 80 studies, actually, that show that connection. But let me just, again, throw you an anecdote, because I think these anecdotes, when they come into thousands or tens of thousands, as they have, they're important. One of my colleagues, a direct colleague of mine in the United States, went to adopt a young Black African-American boy. And she talked to the mother, and the mother, I can't remember the age of this boy, but when he was very young, she took him in for a vaccine, probably the measles one and whatever else is in that vaccine. She said he was a happy, healthy young boy. She went and got the vaccine. She said by the end of that night, he was in the corner banging his head on the wall and he's never recovered. He's autistic. And this story can be multiplied by tens of thousands of times. So when you try and tell that story, though, today, what happens? There's a complete blank face. People look at you like, what are you doing? You're questioning vaccines. Vaccines are the greatest gift to humanity. You're going to kill people if you don't take vaccines. And we saw this mentality that was already pre-existing in the vaccine world suddenly carry over into COVID-19. So when this mRNA gene therapy, which is not a vaccine according to any traditional definition of vaccines, it's a gene therapy.
It oh, even don't worry. Says it don't worry. They changed the definition. It's fine. It's a vaccine now.
They did. They did. But in Moderna's own documentation, it says that the FDA considers this to be a gene therapy. That's right in their own documentation and registration of their vaccine. So people stood in line to take it because vaccines are safe. They're absolutely safe. And I don't want to take up the whole show, but I mean, you could go back to the polio vaccine. I was reading several scientists now saying the only polio pretty much in the world now is that created by vaccines, the polio vaccine. And they're calling for an end to it. Stop it. Stop it. Hundreds of thousands of kids after the Bill Gates and the World Health Organization's campaign in India, they went in and gave these vaccines for polio and hundreds of thousands of kids developed polio. But all of this is denied. All of it's covered up. So now we get to COVID-19 and billions of people have stuck out their arms. And it was like now unthinkable that anybody should question any kind of vaccine. And so what is happening now is we are seeing people, and we're posting it every day on MeWe. We are posting stories of people dying suddenly, heart attacks suddenly. I just posted a story right before this webcast. 1,000 people a week are dying from heart attacks in Australia. I believe that's the story. 1,000. And we're still not questioning it. And so let me go to the words of Dr. Mike Yeadon. Dr. Mike Yeadon, struggling to understand why we would foist this mRNA gene therapy upon people untested. A gene therapy, he says, that you can introduce boosters that would then introduce something else that could change and develop an autoimmune disease or something. He said, potentially in the wrong hands, this could be used to kill people. And he said, I can understand no reason why we would introduce this mRNA gene therapy on a massive scale like this, other than, he said, I quote, a serious attempt at depopulation.
Well, have you seen I'm sure you've seen the YouTube video of Bill Gates talking. I can't remember where he was talking. And I don't know if this was a Freudian slip or if he said it on purpose or if it's, you know, to be fair, or if it's been altered, but I keep seeing it and I haven't been able to disprove it. He's talking about carbon emissions and greenhouse gases. And he says it's a simple math equation. And the easiest way to fix the math equation to get rid of the carbon so that we can bring the carbon down to zero so that we can save the planet is to have less people. And we can do that really effectively through the use of vaccines. It came out of his mouth.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that or not, but I'll try to cough that up and link it in the show notes because it came out of his mouth.
And that was a TED talk he gave. So TED talks are a lot of renowned people go on to TED talks. So it was that was in my documentary, I believe, where we introduced that quote. Now, in fairness to Bill Gates, in another interview, he followed up and this was his theory. He says, people in the third world country, because of so much die-off, they have a lot of children. And so that when the parents are older, that they'll have someone to take care of you. But if we introduce vaccines, he says, then kids won't get sick. And then families will naturally want to have fewer kids. And this will help reduce the population. So that's his explanation for that comment. I have no idea if there's even any science behind it. I think a lot of people in the third world countries, as they do, as my wife and I did, we had children because we love children. because we want families, because it's part of the natural law to propagate, to have children. The problem is Bill Gates. And, you know, Bill Gates came from his father, who was a director of Planned Parenthood. He grew up sitting around the table, he said, his father influencing him as they would talk about abortion and all these things around the table. So, you know, I think one can infer, and I have to be careful, I don't want to speculate too much, but I would think that there's a bit of a mindset in Bill Gates that humanity, if need be, needs to be reduced. And I want to point out John Rockefeller, in their 1968 annual report, stated more work needs to be done on a vaccine that will control the population, will sterilize and so on. I'm sorry, I should have the quote up in front of me. I'm paraphrasing it a bit, but that was the gist of it. I quoted it and showed the quote right on the television. I downloaded a PDF. So here you got the Rockefeller Foundation saying we need to work on vaccines that will sterilize people. And frankly, this has happened where we've seen Bill Gates and the World Health Organization enter third world countries, and women were sterilized after their vaccine campaigns. And they were kicked out of India. And there's huge stuff going on there in the rejection of Bill Gates. They don't want him in the country anymore. And this stuff's out there. But again, the propaganda is so vast. It is so widespread that if you try and look up and see, you'll just see that it's debunked. Politico, Reuters, Associated Press. These are companies, by the way, that I used to look at their news releases and trust them. They're now the greatest purveyors of disinformation on planet Earth, a lot of these companies.
Who owns them?
It's extraordinary.
You know? Have you looked into that?
Into which?
Reuters, Politico, PolitiFact. Those are all owned by the same companies who own the media companies, right? Who are also funded by the drug companies.
That's right.
So that's a conflict of interest because the drug companies are cutting the checks so that the writers can write the articles and the fact checks. They're not going to fact check their sugar daddy.
Well, that's right. I can give you an example. One of the top funders of Facebook, see if I can just find it. I love to quote these things. I mean, there's so much information on the tip of my tongue, but I like to quote it. But one of the top funders of Facebook's fact checker had over $1 billion in stock in Johnson & Johnson. So, I mean, conflicts of interest here abound. And now we've got, of course, Twitter being revealed now that Twitter and Facebook were colluding together to completely silence the narrative, to silence opposing science. And, you know, what's interesting, guys, this comes out and it's still not on the mainstream media. And so yeah. I have family, you guys, you have to understand this. You and I talk about this and we're like, yeah, it's like this, we know this. But the average person out there actually doesn't know it. You know why? They don't go to Rumble. I mean, I've had people say, I've sent them videos that were censored. And so, you know, they were uploaded on Rumble and I'll send it to them. And they'll go, oh, that's on Rumble. I'm not even going to watch it. And I write them back and I say, Rumble is a platform. It's like YouTube. It's a neutral platform where people upload stuff. And I said, besides, the video is there because YouTube censored it. And this mindset out there, unless they see it on CNN, unless they see it on CBC, they have this incredible doubt that it could possibly be true. And that just shows the depth of programming we have right now is so deep, so systemic, and so systematic in the way it's come about that we're now at a point where people are still going for that fourth or fifth booster, even though, you know, they've probably heard from friends, you know, I'm not taking another one. I've heard a little bit through the grapevine, and they're seeing their friends die. They're seeing family members. I have family members getting strokes, and I hear stories from people who know somebody who died right after the shot. And this is getting out, but it's still not on the mainstream media. You have to go to the alternative media. And this is what I've done. I've had to dig and go deeper. And now Google, the only time I really use Google is if I want it. This is okay. Now here, I'll give you a little tip. This is where Reuters and PolitiFact and these guys are handy. If you want to find out if something's true, like what they call a conspiracy theory, and you can't find it on the internet, go to these guys and their fact checkers, because they always go, they link to the Wayback Machine or they'll link to the archive sources, and then you can go to the original articles and actually find the truth right there.
That's so funny.
It's and compare. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I'm using them against them themselves. They don't realize it because they're so deluded right now. But
we've got a lot of information here, and I'm positive that people are really going to appreciate this episode because you're obviously very knowledgeable on this subject. But let's boil it down to its base parts for a really simple, you know, 90-second understanding of what's going on. So what I heard, I'm just going to summarize, is we have wealthy people, very wealthy people, who are pushing an agenda through philanthropy, through international organizations like the World Economic Forum, and through things like the World Health Organization. That agenda seems to be attached to two pillars, COVID and environment and climate change.
Yeah.
Is it possible, and I believe this to be true, that many of these people actually believe they are saving the earth by reducing the human population?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about deception on a great level. Now, there are definitely people who are intrinsically evil, you know, to a certain degree in the world. They are. We've seen people who are just evil. They have a bloodlust. But I think right now we're talking about people who really think on some level that they're doing something for the common good. Now, if you are knowingly injecting an mRNA therapy into people that your studies, Moderna studies and Pfizer studies showed were actually women were losing their babies or people were getting terrible side effects, and you continue with that, there's something wrong with your conscience. So I'm not going to give them a pass. There's a hardness of heart there that comes. And I think we all know this on a personal level, that when I want something that's wrong, I can convince myself and dull my conscience to the point where I just follow through with it. And usually most people eventually will realize what I did was wrong, and they'll ask forgiveness and turn around, or they'll get harder. So I think we're dealing with that, which is why I'm talking about something on a spiritual level here. But I think we need to go further. I think that the depopulation thing is not the end game. I don't think there's people just going, we need to depopulate and we've reached our goal. No, I think the Great Reset and climate change, and we haven't even talked about climate change, you guys. I mean, this is another thing. I was writing articles on the lies behind climate change like years ago, like 8-9 years ago. I knew that there was something up with this because you had meteorologists and climatologists around the world going, you know, the sun and the ocean currents and even a single volcano can unleash and change things in a dramatic way compared to the minute amount of carbon dioxide. And I think the ultimate thing was when they started calling carbon dioxide, you know, painting it as a toxin or a poison. That's what this is upside down. You know, the more carbon dioxide we have on the planet, the greener the planet is. The more plants grow, the more forests expand, the more food we grow. Why would you want to stop that? In fact, if you look historically, it's during little periods where we've had little mini ice ages where that's affected the food supply, where you've got social unrest and widespread famine. So why these guys like Bill Gates and others want to send up aircraft into the sky and spray silver to reflect the sun back and stop global warming is crazy to me. But here's the point. You've got over 1,100 researchers just signed a paper all denouncing the whole climate change narrative. Even the founder of Greenpeace has said this is nothing but an dangerous ideology. It's a money grab, but it goes deeper. And I think it's this. I think it's this. What you're seeing with COVID-19 and climate change is ultimately global communism in a green hat. If you look into the policies of the World Economic Forum, and they just posted this on Twitter again the other day, by 2030, you'll own nothing. and you'll be happy. They're absolutely serious about this. They want to create an economy where you and I don't own our fridges. We don't own our cars. We just lease them for a small price. And all of this is supposed to reduce the carbon footprint of the world. And, you know, what is it? We've got 6 years left until the world ends, according to Greta Thunberg. So I guess I should hurry up. But, you know, that's their goal. And their goal, as I said earlier, it's right on the World Economics website, is to rewild, to get people off the land. This, in fact, was Agenda 21, which was signed onto by over 160 or 170 countries, written by Maurice Strong and Mikhail Gorbachev has had a hand in the United Nations. He's a former communist, of course, writing these green objectives in which we would move people off the land. People would not eat meat. We would not own as much. And all of this is to create equality. But you see, the problem with communism is that communism isn't about raising the standard of life for everybody. It's about taking the middle class and bringing them down to the bottom rung. And of course, your elite class will remain at the top. And this is ultimately right now what we're seeing unfolding. And I'm not exaggerating. This is global communism in a green hat. And it's so convincing. It seems so persuasive. But ultimately, the tenets of Marxism, we're seeing them played through Black Lives Matter, where we're creating these divisions again between white and black. I mean, I thought we were over racism. I thought we were moving forward. But they want to create these class divisions between white and black, between man and woman, between nation and nation. Because when you have these divisions, you're able to sow in this division and create an environment in which you can victimize and create these different classes and so on. We're seeing Marxism on a global scale. And then the other aspect of it is removing private property. And these guys are serious about it. They're serious, and they've already made great strides. I mean, you can't buy vehicles. Here in Alberta, Canada, you go to the average little parking lot, the GM, Ford, you can hardly find vehicles. This is all planned. This is deliberate. They want us in electric cars, and they only want so many of us in electric cars. In fact, the whole concept of smart cities, in which people can only go 15 minutes or 20 minutes beyond your neighborhood. I mean, you hear this and you think that's bananas, but this is in the works. They're planning it. The surveillance systems are pretty much in place to do this right now. It will be a social credit score based on your climate score, how much you eat and how you buy. And so the final aspect of this that we're about to see come pretty soon that will make this possible is a digital ID. And the G20 nations all signed on to this right before Christmas, that will have these digital IDs. And how they'll implement them, when they'll implement them, I'm assuming there'll be an economic collapse. There'll be some crisis of some kind, and they'll say, well, we need this. Everybody needs this. And they've already said it will be tied to your vaccine status. This is all in the G20 statement. This is a major United Nations statement that came out, organized by the United Nations, that will all have a digital ID, and your ability to travel and to buy and move will be tied to your vaccine status. And so what is coming is extraordinary, because we watched people cave in with COVID-19. Wait till you can't buy food at all or enter your grocery store. And so ultimately, this is a global system, David, for control. It's a global system for control, and they're going to need to depopulate to really make it work. That's just one part of it. But I think that's the answer to your question. This is global control. It's global communism. And we've got very little time to fight back. But if you don't mind, and I know you probably have Jewish listeners and Muslims and atheists and so on, but I'm going to share with you my viewpoint. I think John Paul II was prophetic when he went to the United States when he was still a cardinal, and he said this to them. He said, "We are now facing the final confrontation between the church and the anti-church, the gospel and the anti-gospel, Christ versus the antichrist." He said it is a trial which the whole church must take up. And I think we're seeing this spiritual dimension taking place now. I think we're seeing this spiritual battle taking place where our neighbors are now turned on each other. Our family members are turned on each other. And you've got these globalists now ready to take over the entire system. And they have the mechanisms to do it. It's really extraordinary, guys, what we're seeing. And I think we need to fight on a political level, but we need to fight ultimately, I think, on a spiritual level. And I think I personally feel I need to be bold and say that whether people agree with me or not. So,
well, no, I think we always want people to say what they think here. That's the whole point of, in my opinion, Western civilization is based on open dialogue, and we've lost that. And
yeah, we have.
I think I'm going to be honest, I've been quite shocked. I did not believe, and probably foolishly, that any of these things were possible. Right. And I know probably for many of our listeners, they are going to think, oh, not many of them, because we have some pretty awake listeners, I would say. But some of them will hear this and say, well, how can that be? It's just too much. It doesn't seem real. It can't be true. But I would ask those people, is that because you don't want it to be true? Or because it can't be true, right? Is it really, are we now at the point where we don't have enough evidence that they're making moves on freedom itself? They're identifying people who will resist. And we've had podcasts with police on guard. They're pushing the people out of the police force that will resist. They're pushing people out of the medical system that will resist. Yeah.
Yes, they are.
They're pushing people out of the legal system that will resist. They're pushing people out of the political system that will resist. Is it not time that we at least admit, whether you're vaccinated or not, whether you believe anything that's been said here, that they are trying to divide society? It's happening right in front of us. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, that's right. You know, you're reminding me of the story of Moshe. In Hungary in 1942, he escaped from a train to Auschwitz, and he went back to his village in Hungary. And he literally went into people's homes and in the streets telling them, the Nazis are coming. You got to watch out. The Nazis are coming. They're up to no good. And the Nazis arrived, the German soldiers, they walked through the streets. They were pleasant. They gave children chocolate. And Moshe would tell people, no, it's a lie. It's a lie. Wake up, people, wake up. They're up to no good. And the people wouldn't listen. It's Moshe, look at them. They're completely benign. It was within a week after that, the Hungarians were loaded onto trains and many of them never returned home. We're living our 1942 moment. And I'm sorry. I wrote that article a couple of years ago to warn people. And I watched stories coming out, dozens and dozens of stories, people who took the jab and who were physically injured, and family members who were screaming on camera because their son or daughter took the jab and died sometimes within hours. And so I tried for 2 years with my documentary, my website, waitaminute.ca, to warn people of what was coming. And people just they wouldn't listen. They could not believe that if their local doctor was saying, take the jab, that there could be anything wrong. They couldn't believe that Justin Trudeau would say anything that would be harmful. And this is where we're at. People aren't listening. And now here we are, David and Zach. It's done. I think 5 billion people have got the jab. And from everything I'm reading, we don't know the outcome for them. And it's not looking good. Some of the most dire predictions in my documentary, Following the Science, are starting to happen. And I'm grieving because it's so horrible what's happening to people. Thousands are dying every week now, and the media is ignoring it. But something even bigger is coming, and that's this great reset. And yes, I encourage people, don't just take my word. You have to start digging deeper. You have to start going to third party. You have to start going to websites. And for instance, someone like Alex Jones, I don't follow Alex Jones. I think the guy's kind of crazy. but he'll have someone on there like Dr. Mike Eden, I just saw. And you'll have to go to some places where, you know, people are a little bit, you know, unhinged or they're not. But go to the sources, go to the people, listen to what they're saying, and then look up the studies. Go to the studies, read on the medical journals, verify it for yourself, which is what I've been doing. I won't publish anything unless I can verify it, and get to the bottom of it and get to the truth of it. David, I don't know. Like, you and I talked the other night. We need to fight on a political level. We can't give up. We need to get involved in politics. And honestly, people, you know, you said to me the other night, you said, you know, 10 people, go talk to 10 people. And we got to start there. And I, you know, as a Christian, I think it's wrong for you as Christians who are listening to sit there and go, well, we'll just sit here and pray and fast. I mean, do that. Pray. I think, you know, those prayers are powerful. We're in a spiritual battle, but you've got to get involved. So I've been on Twitter making comments on Daniel Smith, Premier Daniel Smith. People will attack her, and I'll go on there and say, no, here's the studies and stuff. And a lot of people won't reply who are attacking her because they can't. You know, someone said, oh, what's the science she's basing on masking? And so I posted my little mini documentary and my article on masking, which has hundreds of studies, especially current studies, to show masking doesn't work at all. It can't work with a nano-sized virus. And people, some people will wake up and some people can't. And I think that's why we got to pray for those people, because some people can't. The propaganda, there's a strong delusion. There's a mass psychosis. And if you look up the characteristics of a cult, you guys, and I did an article on this, like the top characteristics of a cult, you begin to see that everything that's happened with COVID falls right in with this. And what we're dealing right now with is a global cult. And I know some people will be offended by that. Hey, well, come on, man. But it's true. The pressure from the top that you're not allowed to question, the coercion, the exclusion from society, the guilting, these all follow standard cult characteristics. And so being able to convince your neighbor that Daniel Smith isn't killing people by saying, I'm not going to enforce a mask mandate, this is tougher than it looks. And so it's a battle on many fronts, and I don't purport to have the answers. All I can say is I'm doing my part. I'm trying to do what I can. And I see you guys are doing what you can, and I think that's fantastic. And who knows, maybe we can turn the tide. Maybe we can buy time for our kids and grandkids.
I want to read you a quote that Zach and I kind of hold to in these times, and kind of the reason we started the podcast. But I think it'll be a good way to end this, actually. And then I think we should have you back on, because
yeah, like shortly. I was going to suggest we try to hold it to an hour just so that we don't run away with people's time. But this conversation is certainly not over. So if you'll allow us, I want to have you back on again soon.
Oh, sure.
Within, you know, a couple of weeks.
And to talk about
willing.
Climate change, but also to continue this conversation. But I'm gonna read this, and some of the people have already heard it, but hopefully it will be a good reminder. And it goes, and I'm gonna read Alberta into this quote, I'm actually gonna read Canada into this quote, because I think in order to save Canada, we have to save Alberta, but that Canada can still potentially be saved. Let us suppose we are confronted with a desperate thing, say Canada. If we think what is really best for Canada, we shall find the thread of thought leads to the throne of the mystic and the arbitrary. It is not enough for a man to disprove of Canada. In that case, he will merely cut his own throat or move to the United States. Nor certainly it is enough for a man to approve of Canada, for then it will remain Canada, which would be awful. The only way out of it seems to be for someone to love Canada. To love it, to love it with a transcendental tie. Oof. If there arose a man who loved Canada, then Canada could rise into the ivory towers and golden pinnacles. If men loved Canada as mothers love children, arbitrarily because it is theirs, Canada in a year or two might be fairer than Florence. Some readers will say that this is mere fantasy. I say that this is the actual history of mankind. This, as a fact, is how cities did grow great. Hmm. Go back to the darkest roots of civilization and you will find them knotted around some sacred stone or encircling some sacred well. People first paid honor to a spot and afterwards gained glory for it. Men did not love Rome because she was great. She was great because they loved her. Hmm. And I think
beautiful.
You have tried to show love for Canada. Zach and I have tried to show love for Canada by warning people, by saying, this is not good. What's happening is wrong. And you can call us crazy and you can call us names, but we are going to continue to call out the lies. That's all we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't that I said to you the other night when we met David for the first time, up until that the trucker's convoy, I was very sad about my country. But when I saw people of all walks in life, Sikhs, you know, Christians, Muslims, Jews, atheists, I didn't care who they were waving that flag, I fell in love again with Canada. And we stood out on the highway, my wife and I and my sons, with our flags on three horses. And as truckers went by us, we waved our flags and we were crying because we fell in love with this country. And it's been hard to see people, you know, attack us, but we did it for love. We did it for freedom. And we'll continue to do it for love and for freedom. And may I add, we need to do it even at the cost of our lives for our kids and our grandkids. That's where we're at.
Well, thank you very much for coming, and we're going to have you on it again. Any last thoughts, Zach?
No, I think that's exactly where we stand. We're at a crossroads, and we best choose the right path.
Thank you for listening to The Canadian Story. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The Cad Story. That's The CAD Story. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with your friends and family. Let's work together to remind Canadians how great their country is.